The KJS Show, Sundays on Kofifi FM 97.2.
Balimaya Project is a London-based 16-piece collective uniquely fusing West African folkloric music and jazz music, and formed in 2019 by percussionist Yahayo Kamara Onono. The word Balimaya from the Maninka language means the essence of kinship and is ingrained in the moral fabric of the Mande people, which is what inspires Balimaya's mission. The collective uses a repertoire of Mande peoples of Senegal and Mali as the bridge to bring West African music together with jazz and the sounds of Black London, creating something different. Of course, band leader Yahayo pays homage to his Senegalese-Nigerian cultural roots, adding a depth to the music, including the voices of the many communities that have guided him along the way. Yahayo joins us now from London, and during this hour, he and I are exploring the life and times of this exciting ensemble and listening to some of their music. The Balimaya is our cover story. welcome to South Africa. Welcome to the Kofifi FM 97.2, Yahail.
Thank you very much for having me, Ngwa.
And thank you so much for joining us. So we discovered, you know, the Balimaya project through, you know, the album Wall of Soul. But yes, your story begins way before that. You know, let's talk about growing up life, or the growing up life, as it were, in London, and what led you to music.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it. I think music in general had been a huge fabric of my upbringing. Growing up in a West African household, but also growing up in Black London. And so from a young age, I remember, aside from playing on pots and pans and all the kind of typical stuff, but remembering my grandfather playing the talking drum, my mom singing around the house, and also at traditional ceremonies, whether it be weddings or baptisms or naming ceremonies or what have you, these things were all happening around me. This was the influence of our culture that was happening all the time. And so I would say from the age of maybe 4, I was always kind of encouraged, you know, you're still playing, you're having fun and doing things as a young kid musically. But then around the age of maybe 5, 6, my grandfather saw that, you know, he's holding time really well.
Yeah,
he's really interested. You know, he gave me a talking drum. That was my first instrument. I had it like a doll almost, you know, played, took it everywhere. And then around the age of 8, my mom bought me my first djembe. And since then, it's just been, I guess, a love story. It's been on and off, you know, growing up in the diaspora and playing your traditional music when you're faced with grime and funky house and dancehall and hip hop. It's not always easy, but I always kind of found a way back to traditional music. And as an adult, took it on full time.
Yeah, because that was my next thing. I mean, how do you, with all those outside influences, find some time to actually sit down and become part of this instrument? You know, this traditional instrument, as you mentioned, there's been so many other genres around you that were almost knocking at your door to pay attention, but you still kept it. Mm-hmm. You know, so the Balimaya is a 16-piece project. Now, I can imagine in a room, you know, everyone in a room, it's just energies and opinions. And before we talk about, you know, the creative process for the band, firstly, you know, how did you, I suppose, put the whole ensemble together? You know, when did it begin for all of you?
I think for me, Balimaya Project was an idea that I wanted to do for a lot longer than 2019. It's something that I'd always wanted to showcase, I think, West Africa's kind of, Africa in general, but specifically because I'm a West African,
right,
and specifically Mandan culture. I wanted to showcase the kind of the variety that we have in that section of the continent, the kind of in-depth, complex music that's coming out of that culture, and also what's contributed to a lot of music in the world. If you look at what's happening in the West, a lot of the music that's coming out of the West has, like jazz or blues, etc., has direct links to West Africa. But when it came to actually dealing with African music, where there was almost like an anthropological, methodical, meticulous approach to picking apart and dissecting genres and subgenres when it came to other Occidental styles, with African music, they became very lazy. I'm going to an African concert. What does that mean? Am I listening to Ladysmith Black Mambazo? Am I listening to Salif Keita? Am I listening to the Tuareg blues from the desert? What does African music mean, you know? And in the UK especially, it gets relegated to Afrobeat or highlife a lot. But I come from a place where we're in West Africa and we do so much more than highlife or Afrobeat. What's next? How can we show people that it not only can our Mandan music and our folkloric music be held on the same par, for me, it's some of the most complex music styles in the world. And so, and it's also a classical form. So I just wanted to put that out there and have a way of pushing my own little activist kind of way of pushing back at the system, but also ensuring that I was being true and authentic to myself while trying to be innovative with music that I wanted to create. And how we all came together in terms of band members in the least kind of like egotistical way possible. I feel like when it first started, I was the one that knew everybody, but not everybody knew each other or had played with each other before. So I saw Sonzi, our guitarist, for example, who's played with people from Jules to Notes to Amare. He was a guitar that was very much in the guitarist very much in the producer world, but I love the way he plays. And so I pulled him in with people like our talking drummers, who were based mainly in Nigerian churches but didn't play anything outside of the kind of church kind of or maybe the Afrobeat or Yoruba wedding scene.
Yes.
You know, and pulling that in, and then other Amandine musicians like Abubakar Konate that would have been in the traditional circuit or the workshop circuit, pulling it into a musical context, you know, and all of that trying to replicate the kind of energy that we have back home when we have our traditional weddings where there's the lead singer, for example, is there. The djembe player is the musical director, and there's almost an orchestra of musicians that are playing our traditional music in sync and in time, and it's beautiful to see. So yeah, and it being a 16-piece, well, now a 13, it wasn't intentional. If the music required just a djembe and a drum kit and it got the music I wanted, I would have done it.
Yeah.
I just said I was tired of seeing instruments substituted. I think it's important that if we're giving value to our culture and folklore, we can't substitute the instruments that they come with as well. The instrumentation is important for the public to see and for them to be heard by the players that are still playing them. Our folklore in Africa is far from dead. Yeah. It's living. And so they should be given that kind of respect.
You know, mentioned earlier, you know, in our introduction, that the music draws, you know, the inspiration from the Maninka language and the Mandya people, respectively. I want you to share, why was it so important, or why is it an integral part of the music or the storytelling that you bring into, you know, the elements of the West African region? I mean, considering that you're based in London, you could be singing or creating music about that.
I think because a whole part of us being from the diaspora is that there's a yearning to touch home, you know? I grew up without my father, and my mom did what she could to raise me. But there's always still going to be that question of identity.
Yeah.
And if we can't articulate those questions verbally, if we can't articulate them through, or we can't have them answered by the people we need the answers from, we go out and search for our own answers in the mediums of which it's possible for us to have access to.
Right.
For me, it was music. And so music made sense for me. And it made me, I was able to, without having to engage in, I guess, a difficult conversation or trying to find out who this man is or why this has happened, I could find out about myself without it being too jarring, without me having to face the irresponsibility of the man that decided to leave his family. I don't have to deal with the man, but I still have the origin, and I can take from it and build the story that I need to build for myself to have a pride in where I come from as well. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely makes sense. Of course, Kofifi FM, we're chatting to you, Haile Lonono, who is the lead djembe player, arranger, composer, and voice, of course, of the Bali Maya Project, the collective. And we sit at the feet of this ensemble this Sunday and discover this and that about who they are, and also listen to some of their music, as we've been doing in this past hour. Now, you know, I'll take us through the preparation ritual, if there is one, you know, when the band gets ready to create the music now. I mean, unpack that process for us. What does that sound like? What does that even look like?
That's a deep question. I think it starts with me having an idea, and it can start with, if anyone has the access to my phone, you can see my voice notes app or voice memo app on iPhone. You can see a bunch of recordings at 3 a.m., 4 a.m., something comes to me and I like it. And I keep going over the motif and singing it. And to the point that my daughters, who you can hear in the background probably, can sing them back to me, because I've been singing them back for so long, so much.
Over and over.
And over and over. It's been very repetitive. And so when I actually look at the process of writing, normally I'll go to the band with a full piece. The start, the bridge, the arrangements, melodies for horns, et cetera, et cetera, and a way to finish. And then, but the band, being the amazing musicians that they are, complete it by bringing their own flair, their own sounds. And when they start to play, a new idea can form where we can develop the music more. And that's how things are starting to create. And then we flesh it out on stage. We flesh out the music on stage. We flesh out the music on through rehearsals, through sound checks, performing it, finding out new exciting ways of approaching the music through mistake, through bursts of innovation. And yeah. That's how it looks. And then we get to the studio and we try and replicate that energy on stage and that energy that we found through having the experience of being able to work with that music in a very visceral context.
Thank you.
natazo kobena watile kuitongolo ambetazo 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 kobena watile kuitongolo ambetazo. As it to a langeroon, Londor to a langeroon, to Matella, the robber, but it was a langeroon, Toro. I'm better so.
Balimaya has two projects, right? Wolosaw and the latest, When the Dust Settles. Let's yes. talk about the different messages. You know, what are you saying in this new record? You know, perhaps that you didn't say in the debut album.
I think what I'm saying in Wolosaw, I think when anyone's debut album, they want to kind of introduce who they are and what they represent. This is our sound. And this is very true for Wolosaw. I think Wolosaw was what it was for sharing. This is Mandeng music when it comes through the diaspora.
Yeah.
This is what Mandeng music is in a very obvious sense, which is necessary because I wanted to send a clear message to, hold on, this is not Afrobeat, this is not High Life, this is something else. This is also a big band. And I wanted to, you know, so there's no mistaking who we are. I think that was very important to me to make that a statement in Wolosaw.
Mm.
And also, but there was still the messages of advocacy. There were still the messages of activism. There were still the messages of trauma and grief, but not so much at the forefront because the goal was identity in Wolosaw. When the dust settles,
yeah.
is more so now trying to look at the music as a way of being a medium to express emotion.
Yeah.
It's not a live, it's not done in the sense of a live band anymore. Production's very different. I wanted it to be more immersive. I wanted it to be more accessible. I also wanted it to be a bit more abstract as well. I wanted rather than the strict kind of nature of Mandeng music and it's kind of like a lot of classical music that has its forms and structures, I wanted to go outside of that. I wanted to do something that I felt in our culture and in jazz as well,
yeah.
a sound that hadn't been heard before because everyone's story is unique.
Mm.
And so my story hasn't been heard before. And so I really wanted to touch on personal happenings in my life and the losses and wins and lessons learned
yeah.
and express that through music. And so, yes, it was quite different This album's quite different to the last one in terms of sound, in terms of messaging. It's a lot more personal, but no less intense. I think Wolosaw was still deep for what it was and for what it wanted to represent.
Yeah.
When the Death Settles is a different trajectory, if that makes sense.
Yes, it does. And I think it also represents a bit of growth since Wolosaw. You know, more introspection.
We hope so. That's what we pray for.
Yes.
You can't stay in one place. So I believe so, yes.
Yes,
it represents
absolutely.
Growth as well. That's right.
Yeah. You know, speaking of growth, you traveled to Senegal. Let's reflect on that trip. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we went to Senegal at the beginning of 2023. It was one of the dreams that I had for Balemaya Project was to take everyone back home. I wanted everyone to see. It's all well and good to tell people, yeah, because, and we play this rhythm because this happens back home. And yeah, let's go home and see what it looks like.
Yeah.
But more importantly, as Black men, and a lot of the Black men in the band are of either African Caribbean heritage or are of the continent but haven't been there before or haven't been able to have a link to the continent in the way of either performance or understanding how artistry plays out. I think it was very, very important that everybody goes, sees where I'm from, so that when we're writing and or when I'm writing the music or telling people this is what inspired me, you can say, oh, yeah, I've seen it. I can tap into that inspiration too, and it will be more authentic.
That's right.
And so we went for 10 days. It was primarily, we did play on our last day, but the primary point of going was for people to see Senegal, for people to see West Africa, for people to touch the sand.
Yes.
I know how important it is for me to go back home and feel the sand under my feet. And I try and do it twice a year. I know how important it is to me to go into a space and for everyone to look like me. It was, I think, a novel experience for some of the guys in the band who are from Barbados or St. Lucia or Jamaica.
Right.
And people from different ethnic groups say, oh, you look, they start speaking to them directly in their language. And they'll be like, oh, I don't understand. Like, oh, but you look like my cousin from Guinea. You look like my cousin from here. You look
That's
like someone
right.
that I know.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah.
And you blur the lines of, oh, he's a Jamaican, he looks Jamaican. No, you remember you're African first.
You're African first.
You're of African origin, and this is still home. You're still, no matter what anyone says, you're still welcome. You're still something that will continue to change your experiences.
Yeah.
I think it was also important for us to go to, we have a place called Gore Island.
Yes.
We have a place called Gore Island. And Gore Island was in Senegal, is the most western point of Africa.
Yeah.
And on that island, there's the last standing, there used to be, I think he said, 18 slave houses on the island. But there's one left that's a UNESCO
heritage site. Yeah.
UNESCO heritage site.
Mm.
And we went there and just seeing the emotions and seeing people where, and a lot of the guys, their ancestors could have come through this point. And knowing that you're told, you see that door that no longer has a door actual on it, but the door frame, and all you see is blue. And the next point is the Caribbean or the Americas. There's no other piece of land that interrupts that water. But knowing that your ancestors could have spent 6 months in the dark there, the children, women were raped in that space, men were killed, men were put into cells if they were rebellious. And it's funny, there was a point where they said Nelson Mandela went into one of the, there's a small cave where they told us to back into it.
Yeah.
And when we got to three people, it was crowded. You couldn't move. And he was like, normally six men will be held there at a time.
Wow.
If they were the most rebellious of men, men that were planning revolutions, that were planning to escape. And they said that Nelson Mandela went in and he said, the 10 minutes I spent in that space reminded me of my whole time at Robben Island.
Yeah.
And so that was very profound for everybody and for myself, you know, to see it again and to go and translate for the guys. And so I think that experience just made everything real. It made the music real. It made what we are doing real. Balemaya Project is not just about music. It's about, I think, empowering through education. It's about ensuring that the next generation that maybe see us on the stages that we're on can understand that it's our traditional music that's taken us there.
Absolutely.
We have been true to who we are in identity and self in every way possible. And if that means getting everybody to Africa so they can say, okay, at least I've been and I see what it is, then so be it.
I'll make it through somehow. It's been so long, I need a helping hand. So hard, I need a helping hand.
Of course, we're still in conversation with Yahya, and it's all about the Balimaya project and some of his travels around the world, specifically his home country of Senegal and the experiences. And I suppose, you know, gathering that in his mind and creating music with those experiences even provides for a richer and a more authentic offering, you know, when he speaks the language of music that is through the Balimaya project, an ensemble that he is currently the leader of. And of course, you know, Yahya, the scene, you know, when you popped up to Wolosso and now with the new project, how was the response? You know, how are people warming up to the sound? Because, I mean, it sounds completely different. Yes, it might sound very West African, but at the same time, there's contemporary jazz there. There's, you know, there's a little bit of, you know, this and a little bit of that. How has that response been, you know, from the scene?
I think from the scene, it's been, it's because I think, especially being here in the UK, you realize that how people react to things that they don't know. And when people don't know things, it's kind of like, where do we place this?
Yeah.
And the issue is not just because you don't know, it's because one of the reasons why Balimaya projects were started is because places hadn't been created. And so sometimes you have to carve your own way. And we thanks be to God, as we say, Alhamdulillah, that it's been good. It's been a really nice surprise for me because I don't write music thinking, oh, people are going to love this. I write music because I like it and I want to hear it.
Yeah.
And to hear people come to shows and say that it changed their whole perspective, to see the reviews in press, to make top 10 albums of the world list, to receive awards for Like Wolo So, and to be nominated for top 10 albums or top 5 albums or on charting for When the Dust Settles, is really humbling. And so that tells me that we're doing the right thing. It was amazing to go to South by Southwest in Texas, and every room we played in, we filled out with people that had already heard our music.
Yeah.
And I was like, but why are you in America? You're hearing this, and you're here as a fan, you know, I've got a show at, we had a show at The Great Escape in Brighton, and someone said, I drove all the way from Belgium to come and see you guys play.
Wow.
Like, you know, and even we did our headline show, our first London headline show, our second actually, for When the Dust Settles at the Barbican, and sold it out. And it's a huge venue. Wow. And to see that many people come out and, you know, sell out a vinyl at the place, to get the messages that I received from people afterwards saying that, I got a message from someone saying that their mum has, their husband has dementia.
Mm.
And he wasn't remembering people's names, but he was singing stuff from the show. You know, things that's like
powerful.
That really...
That's powerful.
That's powerful to me. Yeah. And but I'm still in awe. I'm still shocked by it. I'm still shocked by the reception. I'm still grateful.
Mm.
It's just the beginning. There's still new music that's here and ready to go out and do stuff, you know. But we're just taking it in, ready hopefully to come out to different places, come out to South Africa at some point.
Yes, absolutely.
That'd be amazing.
Absolutely.
I love South African music, by the way. Since a kid, I loved Zulu music. Yes. I love Ladysmith Black Mamba. I don't know a word I'm singing, but I could sing. I could sing a lot of their songs. There's some great South African artists. There's one singer called Unathi Mzekele that I really listen to.
Yeah.
He's a gospel singer, but he's very, very good.
Oh, incredible.
So there's a lot of, we're influenced by a lot. And the scene is so vast. And even though we've had great reception, I think there's still places where we can tap into. So I'm looking forward to either getting the music out there or writing music that touches people there and that can have a relevancy over there.
Absolutely.
So,
From your lips to the universe, I say, you know, I mean, and of course, we can't even wait to see you coming out to, you know, Johannesburg. I think, you know, when I tweeted about you being on the show and somebody was like, oh my God, I love their work. And I realized there is a following here. We just need you to come out and be a part of the scene and touch base. And I suppose, you know, the sand under your feet, again, using that comparison, that analogy that you used earlier, you know, when you touch base. Yeah, absolutely important. Mm-hmm. You know, and of course, the UK jazz scene is indeed a melting pot of backgrounds, you know, cultural backgrounds from all over the world, you know, allowing for great opportunities of exchange and collaboration. And the last show, you had Nabia Garcia on the stage, you know, some of the notable artists who collaborate with the Bali Maya project. Who else would you like to work with?
Who else would I like to work with? It was a dream to have Nubaya on stage. I've worked with Nubaya for over, I think, 11 years now. We used to play in similar bands together. It's always been love. And to see people like Nubaya, people like Yusuf Days, people like Mansour Brown, people like Hokoroko doing their thing and having a blast and people taking their music in is beautiful. Mm. And there's so many people I'd love to work with. On the London scene, I'd love to do some stuff with people like Fionn Cross. I'd love to do some stuff with Nubaya as well. I'd love to do some stuff with, there's a great band called, and their album just come out, Quarto Alto, who are in Glasgow. They sound really good. But I'd love to do things with Umu Sangare. I'd love to do something with Salif Keita. I'd love to do something with Balake Sissoko. I'd love to do something with Kendrick Lamar. Kendrick Lamar is a huge inspiration for me. And the way his production, the way his music is authentic and it drives a message. That's a huge thing for me. I just love to continue working with our community, big or small. If the talent is there and it's something that works together, then I'm really happy with it. And also love to work with other directors. And this a huge part of this album, When the Dust Settles, is the visual component. And that was really, really important to me. And working with Adeolu Osibodu, a really talented photographer and film director from Nigeria who came to Senegal as well.
Incredible. I watched all of it.
Yeah, he's amazing, man. And and his eye, his vision, everything is just crazy to me. I'm humbled that we're able to work with such amazing artists all the time and be surrounded by them. So, man, I'd love to. And I love the way that there are musicians that are taking their culture and taking it further and being innovative.
Absolutely.
Nduduzo as well. Jimmy Morosi as well. Amazing musicians that are just taking their culture and taking it to another place. So,
that's right. That's right. That's right. Well, all of it will come to pass, of course, when you and I agree on this one, of course. And carry on doing this really amazing work that you do and sharing West Africa in the most innovative, in the most contemporary, in the most modern way that you've created around the Balimaya Project. And of course, thank you for joining us this Sunday as we look forward to our next conversation, hopefully with an entire band here in my studio. You know, when you find a couple of shows in Johannesburg, or in fact, all over South Africa, I think we are literally waiting to see you touch down and be a part of this wonderful movement called the Balimaya Project.
God willing. Thank you so much for having
me.
I really appreciate it.
Of course, you have been an amazing, amazing guest, and thank you so much for the work that you do once again.
Oh, thank you so much, man.
He is composer, bandleader, djembe player, Yahail Kamara Onono of the Balimaya Project, and he was our cover story on the K-Jazz Show.